recognizing that tips are, in fact, income. In a tip credit state, such as all of the states around us and 43 states in the district, servers have to use a portion of their tips, in some cases a lot of their tips, to get up to the federal minimum wage of $7.25 or the Minnesota minimum wage of $8. We're not proposing that. We're proposing that we set the minimum wage for tipped employees at $8 an hour, and that it, but it would only apply if they make $12 an hour total with their wage and their tips on a pay period by pay period basis. So if a seasonal restaurant or a restaurant has a slow day or a bad week, bad weather, and employees don't make it to $12 an hour, they'd get paid whatever the then prevailing regular minimum wage of $9 effective August 1st, $9.50 next year. We think this is a fair and reasonable way to protect the economics of table service restaurants. As recently as 2007, about 50% of the business in the restaurant industry was done at table service restaurants, meaning restaurants that had good-paying tipped employees. Today, about a third of the volume in the industry, according to Nation's Restaurant News, is done at table service. And we worry about losing many of those jobs to fast casual restaurants or to restaurants where the order entry and payment process has been automated. We have an example of what has happened in other states that don't recognize tips as income and that have a higher than federal minimum wage. Washington and Oregon both have minimum wage similar to ours in the $9 to $9.50 range. Neither of them recognize tips. And their average employment per restaurant has declined from about 19 employees per restaurant 7 years ago to about 14 and a half employees per restaurant today, or by almost a third. Minnesota has about 19 employees, 18.8 employees per restaurant. If we were to lose employees to changes in concept, meaning changes to where restaurant or customers order at the counter, go to their table, and a food runner takes their food to them, those are generally not tipped employees. They are at or near minimum wage employees. Or concepts where one orders on an iPad or a tablet computer, as you've seen at the airport or at Chili's, or from an iPhone application or at a kiosk, we're likely to lose. There are currently, we believe, about 48,000 tipped servers and bartenders in Minnesota, according to Department of Labor research from 2013. If we were to follow the Washington and Oregon path, we'd lose about 40,000 jobs. I hope that doesn't happen, but we increase the likelihood of that happening if we don't recognize that tips are wages. The bill Representative Garofalo has introduced is one we've worked on for several years, but it isn't reasonable to call it a tip penalty. We did a detailed survey of wages in the industry and got close to 200 restaurant locations to respond and found that tipped employees on average made $18 an hour statewide and $22 an hour in the metro area. Now, you'll hear another number that comes from a census document called the Quarterly Census of Employment and Wages that uses a median rather than an average, and it uses a relatively small sample and a definition that has led to a lot of counter service workers or food runners being classified as servers. And that average is less than $9 an hour. If that's a good number, those people wouldn't be affected by our proposal because they wouldn't trigger the $12 an hour to stay at the tipped employee minimum wage. So we are confident in our numbers, and we think fighting to save table service dining for guests and the investment in table service dining and those good-paying tip jobs is an important issue. You may also hear it said that the solution is simply to either raise prices or cut profits. We have a very detailed study done by the Deloitte accounting firm in 2014 using data from 2012 and early 13, showing that profit margins in restaurants nationally are relatively low. They do three categories of table service. Those with average checks under $15 an hour, $15 to $25 an hour, and $25 an hour over. The median in this case, and I make it not an average, but median profitability was 3% for the lowest average check, 5% for the middle, $15 to $25, and about 4% for the highest average check restaurants. And those are pre-tax and pre-capital investment. there isn't much margin out of which to pay additional costs. And guests are sensitive to prices. Guests have options at fast casual and quick service restaurants to get the service they get today from our well-paid tipped employees. And so the risk is, my members are good business people, they'll adjust, but the adjustments come at the expense of the concept of traditional table service, non-automated front room, the number of hours we're open, the number of hours people get to work. In a survey we did asking members, what do you have to do to adjust to a $9.50 minimum wage? 93% said raise prices. Well, there's a limit as to how high those prices can go, particularly in border communities, but really everywhere in the state. 67% said cut hours for existing employees, 59% said lay off current workers, 57% said hire fewer people in the future. And one that's particularly frightening, over 60% said delay or eliminate needed capital investments, new and more energy efficient equipment, updated decor, better lighting, a variety of things that help us compete with other concepts and other states. So, Mr. Chairman, this is an important bill to us. It's a bill that we have worked on, a concept we've worked on. It's a better idea than a tip credit. We'd appreciate your support. I'd like to, our next justifier, I think, is Ed Fong from David Fong Trust in Bloomington.
Thank you, Mr. McElroy. And also, just an announcement to the audience. We do have some seats down here if you're looking for a place to sit. However, we also have a overflow room upstairs on the third floor, room 300 South. If you're interested, this is being televised, so you'll be able to watch it on TV. So if you did want to have a seat and go up and watch it on 300 South, just go up to the third floor, and you're welcome to join us at that room as well. So thank you for that, and welcome, Mr. Fong. Would you please introduce yourself for the record?
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and members of the committee for giving me the opportunity to testify for you. My name is Ed Fong. I operate David Fong's restaurant in Bloomington, Minnesota. We are a family restaurant. My parents, I'm second generation. My parents started the business in 1958. We've been a very successful business up to this time, and we hope to continue doing that. I have five other siblings that have been in the business over the time. I currently operate the Bloomington store, and we also open up two other stores, one Savage and one Prior Lake. We've been doing this for a long time, and just by the fact that, you know, I have 40 and 30 and 20-year employees, I think I do a good job what we do. The fact that the higher minimum wage, the two things that I have least control over in my business seems to be my labor and my food costs, which also happen to be my number one and two costs in running the business. I do need some control over that to help me continue doing business. Profitability over the years has definitely gotten tighter. We've had to be smarter operators, and I hope we are doing that. At the same time, I think we're talking about tipped employees that make two, three, sometimes four times the amount of money that the back of my house make on a good night. And that discrepancy really kind of hurts our business and that morale of staff being able to work together and things like that. And so that's why I think the importance of the tiered minimum wage really kind of at least tries to bring that recognition that we are recognizing the back of the house, and that the front of the house, the tipped employees are doing a good job and also getting a good wage, and that for me to try to justify a double-digit increase to my tipped employees and less than that to my non-tipped employees just doesn't seem justifiable. And we try to make it again. I think our proposals are very fair and equitable and acceptable proposal for our staff. I think like Dan said, our really only option is to raise prices, and my customers are also very cost sensitive. I mean, we've been considered a restaurant that provides a fair food at a fair price, and been doing it for a long time, and we want to be able to continue doing that. But we certainly are pushing the top tier of what we can charge our customers. I guess there's not a whole lot else I can say, but we certainly could use your help in trying to keep our costs down so that we can continue providing good jobs and good service to our customers.
Thank you, Mr. Fong. And again, if you and other testifiers, after you get done, if you're going to be remaining in your seats, if somebody has a question for you, please,
yeah,
we hope that you're available to come back.
Any questions, and if you need to contact me after this thing, I'd be more than happy to also do that.
Thank you. Thank you very much for your testimony. Lucas Dean? And then actually, if Keith Olson could come forward and take the next chair, he'll be up on deck. So we'll try to keep the flow moving as best we can here. So welcome to the committee, and please introduce yourself for the record.
Thank you. Thanks for having me here today. My name is Lucas Dean. I'm a server, bartender, and front-of-the-house supervisor up at Grandma's in Duluth. I started in the back of the house as a line cook and have since moved towards the front. I've been in and out of the restaurant industry for about 13 years, and I've done pretty much every job that there is in the restaurant. As somebody that earns tips, I am in support of this tier for the minimum wage amendment. No one's losing out on money under this tier. It's solely to create a solid base for our tipped employees that are not making $12 an hour. I think it's very realistic that our servers and bartenders in this state have the opportunity to make much more money than our back-of-the-house non-tipped employees. Unfortunately for our non-tipped employees, not all of them have the opportunity that I had where I could move to the front of the house. It takes a certain kind of person to be able to interact with people every day, and I've worked with a fair share of back-of-the-house that don't have that. they shouldn't have to suffer because they don't have the people skills. When you're looking at our restaurant in particular, we have about 30-plus hours of tipped employees where the back of the house has roughly 20 hours. And when you have to give all 30 of those hours a dollar raise an hour, and, I mean, that doesn't create a lot of opportunity for them to get a wage that they can live on or get a raise even. I mean, it's a real struggle to be able to compensate your non-tipped employees when your employees making the most money are getting a raise. Again, I want to thank you for listening, and this is a great opportunity for people of our state in the restaurant business to really thrive.
Mr. Dean, thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Olson, please come forward. And if you'd recognize yourself, please, for the record, and welcome.
Thank you. My name is Keith Olson. First of all, I want to apologize. I'm very nervous. I've never done this before. I've never been to the Capitol since sixth grade, so it was time to get down here.
It's great to have you here, Mr. Olson.
I'm from Clearwater, Minnesota. If anybody knows where that is, I'm 94. I bought Keith's Kettle in 2001. Before that, I'd worked for Nelson Brothers on 94 for 11 years and Perkins for 13 years. And I've seen a lot of stuff. I love this business, and it's been good to me and my family. The minimum wage to servers has greatly impacted our business. As you've heard and you probably have read, a dollar an hour, or 75 cents the first run, cost my business $27,000. The margins aren't what everyone thinks they are. Everybody thinks you're getting rich. I got news for them. That's not true. And now when August 1st comes around, when it goes up another dollar, frankly, I don't know what we're going to do. I have 32 employees, and we treat them as family, and we try to take care of them. I have 12 servers, and the servers make a very, very good income. I pay them $8 an hour, and we've heard all the way from $10 to $15 an hour in tips. It averages, but I know for a fact they make between 12 and 20 an hour, even on slow winter days when it's 20 below in Clearwater. The summertime for me is much busier. What really impacts our business is that I have hostesses and dishwashers and cooks. Now, where's the money to give them? And you have a server making all kinds of money every day, and that cook is locked in it. My cooks would make between 9 and 13 an hour, and there's just not enough money to pay them. They want more wages, and we try to do the best we can, but it's very, very tough. I like this whole concept of this tier because I know that I can confidently tell you they're going to make $12 an hour, and if they don't, we'll pay the higher minimum. But this way, it doesn't put as much pressure on the entire restaurant. I guess, are there any questions? I mean, I'll just be honest with you if you have any about our business.
No, I think at this time, Mr. Olson, we're going to hear other testifiers, but they may have something in the future.
Sure.
If you want to just hang out, that would be terrific. Sure. So, especially with a hands-on operator like yourself, you're helping the committee members really understand what it's like. So we're going to get the testifiers in, and we'll maybe ask you for questions.
We do not want to go to fast casual. We've looked at that. I have a lot of old customers. And if I put a computer on that table, they'll just sit and look at it. Okay? And they won't want to do that. And it just is going to absolutely kill our business. And then what am I going to do with those 12 servers? They're depending on me. Thank you for your time.
Thank you so much for your testimony today. Mr. Turtle, come forward. Welcome to the committee, and please introduce yourself for the record.
My name is Brian Turtle. I own Turtle's Bar and Grill in Shakopee. I've been there about 25 years. For a long time, this structure has been troubling me. To sum it up, basically, this bill would make me pay $25,000 to people making $30 an hour, which really is, like was already mentioned, it's tough to pay the back of the house employees when you got to do that kind of an increase to the front of the house. It's a morale issue as well. I mean, they know what those people are making. It's also illegal in this state to force the pooling of tips. Our hands are tied. The only thing we can do is raise prices. I think if you go to Wisconsin, cheeseburgers are $6-$7, and you know here they're 11. And the reason is because of the cost of the labor. So not only that, the job killing is a real concern here. You know, I think you probably remember Punch Pizza kind of spoke out nationally when for the minimum wage. Well, they don't have any tipped employees. They've adopted that corner or the counter order model, and I'm afraid that more and more restaurant concepts are going to adopt that, and fewer of these jobs are going to be out there. That coupled with the iPads. So I guess I don't have much to add other than it's a real big deal. It's a point of contention amongst our employees, and I've had similar response from a lot of our servers that they're actually for this proposal as well because it protects them if they didn't. But we're a busy place, and they make $30 an hour, so it just doesn't make sense.
Thank you very much. Next up is Ms. Somerville Lehman. If she could come forward, please, and introduce both folks coming down, if you would, please.
I didn't bring him to move to the line, I promise.
It's okay. It's a good strategy. And please introduce yourself and your baby, if you would, please, for
yes.
The record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Colleen Somerville Lehman, and this is my baby, Josiah Lehman.
Welcome.
And I have lived in Minnesota for 10 years. I've been in the restaurant business for 16 years. I started out in the back of the house, but I've mostly been a server since then. And this guy... I carried him all the way until a week before I had him, so he's been in restaurants for a long time too. I'm a person who is a server because I love serving, not because it's a job just to make money. I have had lots of different jobs in my life, but I love serving. And I just want to talk a little bit about my opposition to this, the proposal here. I currently work at Hazel's Northeast, which is a small family-owned diner. Average price of a meal is $12 to $13. We're not bringing in $30-$40 steaks and things like that. The last restaurant I worked, I've only worked at Hazel's about 2 days because I took some time off to have the baby. So I'm going to talk a little bit about the restaurant before that. At that restaurant, we did a lot of tipping out, and so I chose the number $100 as a starting point just to kind of make an example, but there were lots of times I did not make $100, but I'm going to use that because it's round. So if I made $100 in tips, that would mean that I was selling around $500 in food and beverages in that shift if I was making 20%, which hopefully I was. At the end of the shift, I would have to tip out $15 to my wait assistant, $5 to the bar, $5 to the food runner, 5% of my sushi sales to the sushi chefs, so let's say that's about $2 or $3. And the restaurant also made the servers pay a tip refund, which basically reimbursed the restaurant for the cost of running credit cards. And this was generally around $1.50 per shift. So in this example, I've paid $28.50 of money that people tipped to me for the service that I gave them to other employees. And if you multiply that by four shifts on average per week and times 52 weeks, I'm paying just under $6,000 of my tips per year to my coworkers. And obviously, with a five-month-old and a mortgage and student loans to pay, every cent that I make counts. And so losing out on that because of the minimum wage would be very unfortunate for my family. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for coming.
Yeah.
Next up would be Alicia Williams. If you would please come forward. And then if Brian Roush would want to come forward, he could sit in the front row too, so we could, again, keep the testifiers coming. Welcome.
Hello.
If you could please introduce yourself to the for the record, we'd appreciate that.
Yes, my name is Alicia Williams. I am from St. Cloud, and I'm currently an organizer with Greater Minnesota Worker Center. I have a personal experience of hardship and struggle working a minimum wage job. I actually had to work two. I was working 60 hours a week, full-time at McDonald's and part-time at Walmart, just to take care of my baby, and I have to depend on government assistance. Now I'm fortunate enough to work as an organizer, and I've come into contact with several tip servers and employees. They have expressed their hardships to me. Many of them are unable to provide basic needs for themselves and their families. These men and women are parents, like she was, students, and very hardworking individuals that are trying to survive. Even though we are way, way, way up in St. Cloud, we are not talking about just, you know, small family-owned restaurants. We're not talking about, you know, we're talking about large chains like Old Country Buffet and Applebee's. And we know that these businesses can afford to index the wage. This tip penalty would freeze the wage, their wages, while the cost of living was around and was still sore. They still need to buy groceries. They still need to buy diapers. They still need to pay to ride the bus. And they still need to pay for tuition. Many of these servers describe to me dead periods in the restaurant where they don't have customers to serve. Their tips are not always guaranteed, and they are still expected during those dead periods to clean the restaurant, to prep, and to do all sorts of things like that. So they deserve to make at least the minimum wage. A study provided by the Jobs Now Coalition revealed that tip servers in Minnesota on average make about $8.68 per hour. So as we know, come August 1st, they will be making less than the minimum wage. I'm here today to testify, of course, in opposition to House File 1027, and I think that it's unfair that tip workers would average less than the minimum wage. All workers in Minnesota deserve to at least earn the minimum wage while they work. Thank you.
Thank you very much for testifying today. Testimony. Mr. Roush, welcome, and please introduce yourself to the record.
Sure. Hi, Mr. Chairman. I'm Brian Roushi with the Joint Religious Legislative Coalition, and we represent faith groups in Minnesota. And we supported the minimum wage bill last year, and just want to reiterate our support for that bill because we think that the minimum wage should provide a wage floor that applies to absolutely everyone. We recognize that the minimum wage is not even approaching a living wage, but rather it's a, I think, a justice-inspired discipline that we put on the market to make sure that nobody is paid below a level that could somehow give them a chance to put food on the table and meet basic needs. This tip penalty proposal provides for a sub-minimum wage, and I want to give you a little different perspective because I view this from a customer standpoint, and you'll hear a lot from restaurant owners and from servers today, but I would like you to think about it just for a moment from the customer's point of view. When customers leave money on the table to reward good service, they don't think for a minute that that money is diverted to the owner of the restaurant. They think that's a relationship that they have with the server. And so I think that's a bit deceptive. And if we were to go this route, I think the public would want to know and should know whether or not a restaurant is a sub-minimum wage house. Other than that, I think it's a deceptive practice. I've been running some just some little spreadsheets about what kinds of employees could be negatively affected by this. And what I figured out, and it's kind of it's a place that I frequent up north. It's called the Loon's Nest. It's in Virgis, Minnesota. I don't know if anybody's ever heard of it, but I'm often there for Saturday morning breakfast. And I get the impression that the wait staff there are part-time workers, high school students, some older citizens who are just picking up a couple of shifts. And what concerns me is I could be the customer that leaves maybe a $5 tip on the table that pushes them over the just barely over the $12 threshold, but it would result in a net loss of income. There's a cliff effect in this bill. It's possible for me to leave a tip that results in less income for the server. So I want you to think about that. I think it's a serious flaw. Thank you for the opportunity. Happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much, Mr. Roush. Perhaps we'll be calling you down in a little bit here. Thank you. Next up is Steve Hunter. If it's Steve, could come please forward. Next up would be Jill Gagan. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's wonderful to be here. My name is Steve Hunter. I'm the Secretary Treasurer of the Minnesota AFL-CIO. A labor federation made up of over 1,000 local unions representing 300,000 workers throughout the state. I'm here today to testify in opposition to House File 1027, a proposal which would penalize tip workers. Tips are meant to show appreciation for good service, not as an excuse to pay for employers to pay their employees less. Customers should not be forced to subsidize low pay with their tips. The minimum wage increased in August, and Minnesota's hospitality industry is currently experiencing record job growth, according to the websites for the National Restaurant Association. There's no evidence that a tip penalty for servers leads to better pay for cooks and dishwashers. In fact, research shows that kitchen staff in states with a tip penalty are usually paid less than they are in Minnesota. While it is possible that some servers can make more above the or can make above the minimum wage, most are not employed by expensive restaurants. The median wage for servers in Minnesota before the 2004 increase, including tips, was $8.68 per hour, or about $18,000 per year. That's the average wage. We've heard that some make more, but the average wage is $8.68. Restaurant servers, the largest group of tipped employees, experience poverty at a rate nearly three times that of the workforce as a whole. States with tip penalties have a higher poverty rates for servers. And I do not believe that reducing the wages of low-income workers is a path to economic prosperity for the state of Minnesota. And it's simply wrong for anyone who works full-time to live in poverty. On behalf of the Minnesota AFL-CIO and our affiliated unions, we urge you strongly to oppose this legislation. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Good afternoon. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you.
Please introduce yourself for the record.
There's actually two more that are missing. They're in my okay. I'm sorry. My name is Jill Gagan. I am a professional, longtime server. When I started out in this business, we had a two-tier system. I worked as a dishwasher for $3.05 per hour minimum wage. I was adopted into the service field on a Friday night fish fry as a server said, "That's it, I'm out of here," threw her uniform at the manager and left. I was given a uniform warm from the previous owner in my red knee highs, and earth shoes, I entered my profession. In that two-tier system, as a server, I was supposed to be paid $2.20 per hour. I was paid $2.12 per hour. I was used as the dishwasher. I was used as the hostess. The two-tier system, I can tell you, from working it, does not work. I am a full-time professional server. I'm dedicated. I am loyal. I come in clean, professional, sober. My guest is my priority. The reason my guest is my priority is because then my guest will come back. It is imperative to me that the heart of the house is recognized for their hard work, and I have seen homes, houses is what we call them, where jobs are increased. There are hostesses, because now, since they have to pay a minimum wage either way, they actually let me take care of my guest instead of seat the guest, go wash the dishes, mop the floors. Because if they're paying a minimum wage both ways, they will hire for the other position so my guest can get the service they deserve. That is who I'm there for. I claim all of my tips. I am an honest person. I don't have any hidden account somewhere offshore. All of my money stays in my neighborhood, in my state, and the USG gets their dollar from me. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Bree Halverson is scheduled to appear next. After Bree would be Rick Varco on deck. Welcome.
Thank you.
Please introduce yourself for the record.
Thank you, Chair Baker, and thank you, committee. My name is Brianna Halverson, and I am the State Director of Working America. We are the community affiliate of the AFL-CIO. And I am here today to testify against this bill here today because we believe this is a tip penalty. So our members don't have the benefit of a union at the workplace, and we hear every night from many of our members that they're working 2 to 3 jobs to make ends meet here. That's the reason why we joined the Raise the Wage Coalition last year to work on increasing the minimum wage to $9.50 with indexing. Because many of our 280,000 members here in Minnesota are in the very industries that are gonna see an increase. And we know that the minimum wage is intended to be a floor. And we feel that this tip penalty will cap wages for tipped employees here. As you'd heard from other speakers, and we hear it from our members as well, that you know servers and tipped employees are making $18,000 a year roughly before the increase came, which we all know is hard to support your family on $18,000 a year. It means that either you are finding more than one job or you are living in poverty. And, you know, in Minnesota, we want to make sure that all workers are getting a fair shake, and we want to make sure that we are thinking about legislation that incentivizes full-time work and help workers get ahead. And we feel that this tip penalty will not do that. So I urge you today to vote against this and come back together and think about legislation like fair scheduling or some other legislation that will help workers be able to have one job. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Rick, welcome.
Hey there.
Please introduce yourself and welcome.
Chairman Baker, members of the committee, my name is Rick Varco, the political director of SEIU Healthcare Minnesota. We represent about 15,000 hospital, clinic, and nursing home workers throughout the state, and we also now represent almost 27,000 home care workers. We are opposed to House File 1027. This bill will not just penalize tipped workers, it will drive down wages for a broad sector of workers, including health care. Our union doesn't represent any tipped workers. Our members do, however, work in similar fields and use similar job skills. The dietary assistant at your local hospital or nursing home performs many of the same tasks as the cook and cashier at your local restaurant. The environmental service worker at your local hospital and nursing home uses many of the same skills as the dishwasher or janitor at your local restaurant. All these workers compete in a similar pool of the labor market, and so their wages often move in tandem. As a result, while House File 1027 may look like it targets a very limited set of workers, it will in fact create ripple effects throughout the job market. Currently, market competition means healthcare employers need to watch what local restaurants are paying. For example, on March 5th, SEIU will begin contract negotiations with Mayo Clinics and hospitals for hundreds of dietary, housekeeping, and environmental service workers. Both buyer and seller are looking around the market at other opportunities. If House File 1027 allows a significant cut in wages for local restaurant employees in the Rochester area, the local healthcare employer, Mayo, will feel less pressure to offer better wages. Local healthcare workers, hearing about wage cuts from their friends who work in restaurants, will feel less able to stand up for better wages. In short, House File 1027 will drive down wages throughout the economy. Finally, House File 1027 is unnecessary because there's no evidence that excessive wages for low-wage workers are holding back our economy. The share of our economy going to wages is the lowest it's been since the 1960s. Whereas the United States used to lead the world in the share of our economy, or GDP, that went to workers' wages, we now trail almost every other industrial nation. Since the end of the Great Recession, Minnesota's top 1% have seen their incomes grow 37.9%, while the rest of us have only seen 5.4% income growth since then. For our families and for the good of economy, Minnesota's healthcare workers ask you to reject this bill.
Thank you, Mr. Varko. Next up is Amy Koch. Amy, could please come forward. Following Amy would be Chris Jacobs. Welcome to the committee. Oh. It's good to see you, and please introduce yourself again for the record.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members. I am Amy Koch, and I don't know if this is my first time in front of the House of a House committee. Maybe. So thanks for the opportunity to speak. I'm here in the capacity as a bar and bowling alley owner in Maple Lake, Minnesota. Perhaps you've heard of it, Maple Lake Bowl. And I just want to testify in support of this bill. It's a difficult discussion that you're all having today. And when you're hearing from servers and when you're hearing from small business owners, there's probably no one here testifying that's got a lot of offshore accounts tucked away somewhere. It's a tough go, particularly outside the metro area for a small business. My employees are extraordinarily important to my business. I wish, and they work so hard, I wish I could pay them $20, $25 an hour. The reality of my business doesn't allow for it. And so this is not about me coming to you and saying, I want to pay less. I'm asking for some flexibility to allow my business to run and flourish, because ultimately, in the end, what I'm trying to do is provide some jobs, make some money, and do, you know, and the other thing is, the other person that you're missing in this are the customers that I'm serving. The customers that I'm serving tend to be just average Minnesotans. My prices are fairly set, and they would absolutely notice a fluctuation in the price of a bottle of beer or in my menu items, and so I have to be very sensitive to that. And so by allowing some flexibility with this, which Representative Garofalo is saying, if my tipped employees are making under $12 and I have to pay the higher a minimum, happy to do that. That will happen. But if you can allow me some flexibility to pay my cooks a little more and to make sure that my business model is running in a way that I can afford to stay in business, that's what we're asking for here today.
Thank you very much. Chris Jacobs. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
If you could please introduce yourself for the record, that would be great.
My name is Chris Jacobs, and I am the executive director of the Statewide Jobs Now Coalition. Thank you for the opportunity to present the case for honoring a 30-year-old commitment, a commitment to higher standards for how we value the nation's best workforce. Although there are a lot of fanciful notions being served up by the hospitality industry here today, I'm going to focus on just two of them. First, that waiters and waitresses are paid too much money. And second, that if restaurant owners could only pay their wait staff less, they would pay their kitchen staff more. According to the most recent data compiled by Deed, the median wage for servers, and you've heard this figure before, including tips, is $8.68 an hour. In other words, half of Minnesota servers earn more than $8.68 and half earn less. And the same Deed survey shows that 90% of Minnesota servers earn less than $12 an hour. The hospitality industry claims that since these figures are based on a survey, they shouldn't be taken seriously. But the wage levels I'm citing here are from a survey of all the restaurants in the state. The much higher wage levels cited by the hospitality lobbyists are from a survey of just their own membership, which probably consists of less than 10% of all the restaurants in the state. It's also worth noting that even if the $18 average wage from the industry's membership survey reflected what most Minnesota servers earn, this wage level is not what could be reasonably called a high wage. What's more, the $18 figure is only a bit higher than what Deed's new cost of living in Minnesota research shows, is just the statewide average for a family supporting wage at a basic needs level, and that is $16.34 an hour. Restaurant owners tell us that if they could pay their wait staff less, they would pay their kitchen staff more, but there's no evidence that the money taken from the pockets of servers ends up in the pockets of cooks and dishwashers. If this were true, kitchen staff in tip penalty states like Iowa and Wisconsin, where servers are paid less than $3 an hour, would be paid about $5 an hour more than kitchen staff in Minnesota. But that's not what happens. On average, restaurant cooks in Iowa and Wisconsin are not paid $5 more than in Minnesota. They are paid a dollar less. In fact, according to Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, Wisconsin ranks 9th out of 10 Midwestern states in job growth. And the typical Wisconsin worker earns $5,000 a year less than a Minnesota worker. By almost every measure, Minnesota workers are the best in the nation. We cannot afford to devalue our most important asset. In Wisconsin, nickel and diming workers is how they choose to compete. In Minnesota, we have higher standards. Let's keep it that way. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Next up, Jessica Anderson. And then following Jessica would be Anna Bartolome. Did I pronounce that right? Welcome, Ms. Anderson.
Thank you.
You could please introduce yourself for the committee.
Yes. All right. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Jessica Anderson. I'm the Legislative Affairs Director for Children's Defense Fund Minnesota. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today in opposition to this legislation. The Children's Defense Fund Leave No Child Behind mission is to ensure every child a healthy start, a head start, a fair start, a safe start, and a moral start in life. One of the most significant ways we can ensure children have a solid foundation in life is to make sure their families are economically secure. 1/3 of Minnesota children live in families that cannot afford a basic needs budget. When families cannot afford to meet basic needs, such as housing, food, transportation, health care, or child care, children feel the effects now and into the future. As an example, research shows that children experiencing food insecurity have more trouble concentrating and behaving in school. Children without health insurance are more likely to receive delayed care when they're sick or injured. The effects of economic insecurity during childhood linger into adulthood. Children growing up in households with lower incomes are more likely to have lower earnings, fewer work hours, poorer health, and less schooling as adults. But when we increase family income, we improve child outcomes. For example, a 2011 Brookings study examining the effects of family income on school readiness found that an additional $1,000 of average annual family income throughout early childhood results in higher reading and math scores for children in low-income families. This is why CDF has long championed increasing the minimum wage and why we were so thankful to last year's legislature for passing historic legislation to raise the wage indexed to inflation. Raising the wage was a victory for hardworking moms and dads, and it was a victory for 137,000 children who would now be more likely to go to sleep at night with food in their stomachs and a roof over their heads. As I said, one-third of Minnesota children live in families that can't afford a basic needs budget. We should be working to strengthen family economic security, not weaken it. Repealing, lowering, and freezing the minimum wage for tipped workers weakens family economic security. It is a step backward for Minnesota children and their families, and we hope legislators will oppose this bill. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Thanks for having me today. My name is Anna Bartholomew, and I've been working as a server in restaurants for over 10 years. I'm currently a graduate student in the School of Public Health at the University of Minnesota, and I attribute many of the opportunities I have had in part to having been paid a livable wage as a server throughout my undergraduate education, my graduate education, and the time I took in between. I'm here today to express my deep concern about what is being proposed in House File 1027. In my opinion, tips should be used as a reward for service, not as an excuse for employers to pay them less. This bill proposes that if a worker averages more than $4 an hour in tips, their base wage will be cut to $8 per hour, below the minimum wage. As a server, I relied on my tips equaling more than $4 an hour to compensate the minimum wage I was paid. If this law were passed, I would likely find another job or be forced to work more hours and subsequently give up many of the opportunities I have as a graduate student, such as participating in research, internships, and volunteer work. I have been fortunate enough to work at establishments with a decent tip rate. However, few share this privilege. While servers can make above the minimum wage, most are not employed in expensive restaurants. We've heard this medium wage number. States with tip penalties have a higher poverty rate for servers. I was paid $2.33 working as a server in Wisconsin and found work after just 3 months somewhere else because it was not sustainable for me. Restaurant servers, the largest group of tipped employees, experience poverty at nearly three times the rate of the workforce as a whole. Of additional concern is the effect this proposed bill will have on the pay gap between men and women. Women hold most of the jobs that are affected by the minimum wage. About 70% of servers are women. In Minnesota, women lose nearly $8 billion per year due to the pay gap. We need to eliminate the pay gap, not grow it. If there's anything I've learned as a grad student in public health, it's that our health is inextricably linked to poverty. The passage of this bill would signify a significant step backwards after the great strides that were made last legislative session to raise the minimum wage. Please consider the 50,000 servers who would be affected by this bill. And thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Next up, we have a number of people from Take Action Minnesota. If they could come forward, please. Take Action Minnesota. Anybody here for the testimony? Okay, thank you. If somebody wants to sit up at the table as well, and
she's going
to
testify in a whisper because the baby's sleeping.
That sounds good. Welcome.
Hello, Mr. Chair and committee.
Please state your name.
My name is Jessica Eichlenberg, and I live in St. Paul. I'm testifying today in opposition to this bill. I've worked in the food industry for over 10 years, and I'm an excellent server. I enjoy it. The hours are flexible enough so that I can spend as much time with my daughter as possible. As a single mom, that's really important to me. She's a young baby. I don't want her in daycare all day long so that I can just pay the bills. For the past 5 years, I worked in North Dakota, where minimum wage for servers is half that of Minnesota. There, I was paying $600 a month for a two-bedroom apartment, and the minimum wage was $4.85 an hour, so I was just barely making ends meet. And I moved back to Minnesota this summer just so that I could kind of start over and have a better start for us. Now I pay $840 a month for a one-bedroom, so that's way more. So if you were to do this tip penalty, that would just decrease my minimum wage. I would never be able to make rent, and I am the sole provider for me and my daughter. How am I going to buy diapers, food, utilities, and new clothes every month for her as she grows every week? Cost of living goes up every year, but you want to freeze my income. This winter, my heat bill is $250 a month. And winter is the time of the month when tips are the worst. So without a minimum wage index to inflation, I can't provide for my family. You have a choice. Please do not decrease or freeze my wages.
Thank you very much. Next up. Welcome.
Hello, Mr. Chairman. My name is Grace Brosnan. I am 19 years old, and I work in a coffee house in Northfield, Minnesota. I work for minimum wage, and I work for tips. A study at Cornell University showed that tipping is essentially a random process, and I, as a server, have experienced that. My tips vary from hour to hour, whether in the morning or in the afternoon. They vary from day to day, and they vary from month to month. For example, today I did not get very many tips as it was very cold out and many people didn't come into the coffee house. And the fact is that this incredibly random and unstable source of income is very dangerous for me. I am trying to save up money so that I am able to afford college. And I also have to pay rent and I have to buy food for myself. So when my tips are varying constantly on top of a low minimum wage, that does not give me a stable way to forecast whether or not I'm going to have enough money to pay my rent, buy my food, or even go to college. But it's not just college students who are working for minimum wages. We've seen many mothers, fathers, and family people here who have to pay for their families and have to pay for their homes and apartments simply on a minimum wage and on a very random and unstable tip payment. And a strong minimum wage is essential for these families. A study from the Economic Policy Institute in August of 2013 showed that the average age of minimum wage workers is 35. So these are not college students. I am a young person, but I am the exception here. And if you freeze the minimum wage and if you lower the minimum wage for tip workers, we will have an even less stable source of income, and we will not be able to pay for our food, for our rent. I will be unable to afford college, and many of my coworkers will be unable to afford to have a good life for their families. Thank you.
Thank you very much for coming in today.
Hello.
Welcome.
Well, thank you for having me, Mr. Chair and Committee. I'm here to testify in opposition of this bill. And my name is J.C. Behrens, and I am a single mother of three kitties. And I've been a waitress for years. I don't currently do it right now, but I waitressed for years and years. It's hard work, period. It's hard work. Busting back and forth, here and there, multitasking, trying to remember everybody's order, trying to make sure you get it right. Oh, did I forget the ketchup? Now I gotta run back and get your, it's like, it's really hard work. I'm balancing all the drinks on one hand, on one tray. It's like, to me, it seems like it's common sense to pay what, you know, I don't even think $11 is enough, but okay, at least that, because the tips vary. There's never, ever a set amount of tips that you know that you're guaranteed. Some people tip good, some people don't, and it depends on where you work, and again, like people have already said, the hours you work, there's, the thing that matters to me the most, I'm trying not to get too emotional here, because this, it really hits me personally, there's a difference between living and surviving, and I can guarantee you that every owner is living, okay? But the wait staff, the people that bring the people in, the people that are showing them hospitality and providing them their drinks and their meals and making them feel comfortable and welcome and making sure that they're coming back to that spot, they deserve to live too. And when you're paying people prices that they can barely survive off of and take care of their family off of, it's an insult. It's an insult. It's hard work, and I've already said that a million times, so I won't say it again, but what I will do, with no disrespect intended, challenge you. If you feel like $8 is truly an honest wage to do the work that I've done, to do the work that they do, then do it. For $8 an hour, 1 month, even 2 weeks, and if you can handle it, and you can pay your bills after that's said and done, then I won't say another word. But I guarantee you, you can't. And I guarantee you after that month or 2 weeks, you'll be singing a different song. Because it's hard work. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much for coming in today. And here we go. Welcome.
Thank you, and thank you, committee members and Mr. Chair. My name is Helen Forsyth. I'm here in opposition of this bill. I'm a server in Northfield, Minnesota, and I am a tipped worker, but the tips that I make, as we've heard from other tipped workers, are not a reliable supplement to my wage. I often have to reach out to friends or family in order to meet my basic needs, and because of that, I have become an entrepreneur. Myself and some other young people in Northfield who are facing a similar struggle are trying to start our own small business and putting what little free time we have into crunching numbers and trying to see how we can make that work. So I know that for myself, this isn't working. My wage and my tips together are not making my life livable. And I also want to share with you a story about one of my coworkers. We've heard from several mothers who work a minimum wage job with tips. I work with a woman who has a 2-year-old daughter who works full-time as a single mother trying to provide for her daughter, and she is unable to do it. It really is an unreasonable task that she has to try and raise her daughter on minimum wage even with her tips, which, as we've said before, are an unreliable source of income. And so I'm in opposition of this bill, and I want to highlight that I, as a young person, am in opposition. But this is also about working families, so I'm in opposition. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Welcome.
Howdy. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, the committee, for having me. My name is Cliff Martin. I drove up from Northfield, Minnesota, which is about an hour south. I'm here to speak in stark opposition to this bill. I'm a low-wage worker and a contractor and receive tips in both of those jobs. If you believe that you can live on minimum wage, then you've never had to try it. It's as simple as that. I can tell you that as a tipped worker, the only reason that tips matter is because the minimum wage is already too low. That's why tips make the difference right now. Lowering the wage isn't going to help that. Unlike the CEOs I work under, I'm not swimming in extra money and cars and summer houses when I get extra money. I'm buying food. I'm paying rent. I'm buying gas to come to the Capitol to make sure that this bill doesn't pass, so that life doesn't get harder and more stressful and more painful for working people in Minnesota. If the goal, if your goal, is to increase poverty in Minnesota, then this bill can do that. If you want to make the lives of working people more painful, more busy, more stressed, then this bill can do that. I'm also an aspiring business owner. As a central part of our business plan, we have built in a living wage because that's how business needs to run. The closest we've come to that in Minnesota is a strong minimum wage. And that wage, even now with tips, is not enough to live. The wage is already too low for people to survive, and lowering it is going to hurt people in Minnesota. Freezing the wage or a tip penalty is an attack on me, on my mental health, on my time, and on my dignity. Am I worth only scraping by on survival? Am I worth only the random chance of getting a tip? No. I'm worth not just surviving, but thriving. Working families in Minnesota deserve to thrive and not just get by. This bill is an attack on the dignity of working people. And you have a choice to stand with workers or to hurt them. You have a choice to stand with me or to hurt me. Choose my dignity. Choose our dignity. Choose the dignity of working families in Minnesota. Don't freeze the wage. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Looks like we have two more remaining that are signed up ahead of time. Next, if Ms. Hale could come down. Then our last one would be Mr. Stevenson, if he could be also on deck, and then we'll look for anybody else that wants to testify that has not yet signed up. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Rachel Hiley, and I'm a student with the Minnesota Public Interest Research Group, MPIRG. I have worked for TIPS, and I'm here to present testimony in opposition of House File 1027 from another tipped worker, Emily Harris. My name is Emily Harris. I am a student at the University of Minnesota Twin Cities, as well as an employee at Olive Garden, and I work for TIPS. I faced quite a dilemma last week when I found out this bill would be heard today. I had to decide between attending class or defending my wage at a job that I work to pay for class. Many young people face similar issues every time you reduce our ability to make a dent in our debt burden. This is made worse by the fact that when my classmates and I come to this building to advocate for more affordable higher education, we often hear things like, "We can't hold your hand the entire time," and "I worked to pay for my education," despite the fact that these arguments are made irrelevant by the increasing costs of our education. I am trying to do just that, work to pay for my education, yet some of the very people who preach these ideas are now supporting a bill that would make this even harder. Some may argue, because I receive tips, I don't need to make the minimum wage because my tips will cover the difference. But the money I make now, with minimum wage and tips, still just barely covers the cost of my rent, food, and other monthly expenses because I can only work a limited number of hours with my schedule as a full-time student. Even with all the time I currently spend working, I don't have enough left over to pay much of my school tuition. If my wage was frozen, I wouldn't even be able to cover my monthly expenses, which would leave nothing left for me to put towards school. The bottom line is that I need every dollar from my wage and tips to get by. Simply put, this bill would repeal the minimum wage. It will lower my wage and it will freeze my wage. As a student, the cost of my tuition does not cost of my education does not freeze, even if my tuition does. My rent does not freeze, and the cost of my food certainly does not freeze. How does it make any sense to freeze my means to pay for these things? I plead you, do not turn back the clock on Minnesota's workers. Stop the tip penalty bill today in this committee. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
My name is Grant Stevenson. I'm a Lutheran pastor in St. Paul and on staff with the Isaiah organization. We have been strong supporters of the minimum wage increase in Minnesota, and we stand opposed to House File 1027. We are an organization of over 100 congregations. It's an institutional membership in our organization in the Twin Cities, St. Cloud, and in Greater Minnesota. And our growth edge as an organization, frankly, is in Greater Minnesota, including your wonderful city. And we have been in conversation with congregations and clergy around the state, and over we hear the same set of concerns mm-hmm. around food scarcity and around wage depression and the kind of economy that is changing. More and more of our people, obviously here in the Twin Cities, but around the state, are in a service sector economy. We used to think, at least I was raised to believe, whether this is really true or not, I don't know, but I was raised to believe, you work in service sector jobs in high school, and maybe for a little while after high school, and maybe to help get yourself through college, and then you become part of the professional class, or you work in union trades, or in the union trades, and less is that true. And it's hurting our congregations, it's hurting the members of our congregations, but even the institutions themselves no longer have the income base in their institutions in order to sustain themselves. As I was thinking about coming here this morning, it occurred to me that this is about as ancient an issue as we can address here at the Capitol. If you look into the Proverbs and into the Prophets and even in the New Testament, over and over again, the issue of wages and a worker earning and deserving his or her wages comes up. Paul, when he talks to his young disciple Timothy, says, I like this, "You shall not muzzle the ox while he is walking, trampling to separate the grains." Even the animals deserve what they need. And Paul goes on to say, a worker needs their wages. By that, he would have meant a day's living wage, not what in Minnesota and in modern times we have come to describe as a minimum wage. The only thing that embarrasses me a little bit about coming here and talking about a topic like this is I think how often in this state and how often in this country, how many thousands of hours do those of us who have the privilege to dress like this and sit in leather or maybe this faux leather chairs in paneled rooms and debate the worthiness of the wage of the lowest wage earners in our state and in our country, rather than finding more and more ways to celebrate them, to lift them up, and to understand that they too are the backbone of our economy and of our state. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. That concludes the folks that have signed up in advance to testify in for or against the House file in front of us today. Because this is a public hearing, is there anyone else that would like to speak for or against this House file before we close the public hearing? And if you'd like to do that, I just want to have you come forward. I have one gentleman who raised his hand, and so again, we'll take the time. I want to make sure everybody has the ability to say what's on their mind. So if you would just welcome, and then please announce your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Tim Mahoney. I'm the owner-operator of the Loon Cafe in downtown Minneapolis. We have a sister restaurant called J.D. Hoyt's, also in downtown Minneapolis. I am the president of the Warehouse District Business Association. We have approximately 25 to 30 working restaurant, bars, clubs, music venues, and so on, that I also represent. I'm here today to talk about one thing that kills our industry, and that's labor. And when you start talking about tipped employees, it's a very touchy subject for us owners. A lot of people here today believe that we're all millionaires and we got houses and we got offshore accounts. That's just not the truth. However, what I would like to do, this is my payroll from the first 2 weeks of February, the slowest 2 weeks of the month or of the year. I have I pulled by random, this is an actual pay stub for one of my waitresses. She worked 34.75 hours in a two-week period. She made $742.83 in charge declared tips. Now, as an employer, that is considered income. and I have to pay my share of taxes on that number as well as she does. Now, if you calculate this out, basically what she made was $21.38 an hour in charge tips, plus her minimum wage. When I hire a waitstaff person front of the house, I don't hire them as a minimum wage employee. I hire them as an employee that makes minimum wage plus tips. Now, the question I have for you, the Department of Revenue, the state of Minnesota, IRS, they all compute declared tip income as part of income. We pay taxes on it. But at the state level, we don't, as a minimum wage, it's not included. Now, if you think about that over a long period of time, it amounts to a lot of money. And when you start talking about the discrepancies from the front of the house and the back of the house, this year, for example, every year I do a review of all my employees in the back of the house. The minimum wage went up a dollar. I couldn't give them the big raise that they wanted. I didn't have the money. I didn't have the resources. Our labor is set at a certain way that we can make money, that we can afford to employ people to keep them in good paying jobs. Most people that are in this industry, I can go all the way to the top boys and girls that are, you know, at the big steakhouses and how much money they make. My employees on a general basis that are tipped employees do not even get checks at the end of the pay period. It all goes to paying taxes. The detriment to me is when you raise the minimum wage, my labor cost goes up. This past year alone, this past 2 weeks, because of the minimum wage going to $9 an hour, it would cost me approximately $2,800 and $2,876 to be honest with you, in a 2 week period. This was two of the slowest weeks of the year. Now you multiply that over, you know, 52 weeks, that number gets to be pretty big. And we're not all millionaires. We work damn hard. My employees, my front of the house employees, are the best. They work, they do everything I ask them to do, and they are compensated accordingly. And I always tell them every time I sit down to a meeting with them, and I say, you know what? I hired you as like a subcontractor. I'm giving you the opportunity to make money here. The harder that you work, the more attention you pay to detail, the better off your gratuity is going to be, and the more money you are going to make. And that, in reverse, kicks it into me, where I'm going to make enough money so I can afford to pay them. It's a tough industry. This is a tough decision. I think it's a fair decision. I own a bar and restaurant in another state that does not have what they call a tipped. Actually, it's a restaurant employee wage, and it's $5.25 an hour we pay these other people. And I can tell you this right now: every time that we have an opening, there's a line out the front door for that job. Because they don't care. I mean, I bet you if you polled, you go to a restaurant today or tomorrow, go anywhere you want to go, and say to the waitress, what do you make an hour? Oh, I make minimum wage plus tips. What's minimum wage? I bet you they don't even know what it is. Last year when the minimum wage went up, all my employees were like, do I get a raise? Yeah, you got a raise. Because they got money on their checks, where they didn't before. And now the $2 and $1.50 or $2.50 over a two-and-a-half-year period, that's a substantial amount of money coming out of the resources that, for myself, I'm looking, if I want to do another place, now I have to reorganize. I have to think differently. What's happening in the West Coast, in our trade industry magazines, the biggest thing that's happening in, like, Seattle area, it's all counter service. And what they do is, at the end, when they give you your bill, they have an administration cost. And what they do there is they spread it out and they pay all their employees that way. Now, hopefully that won't happen for us, because there's a lot of well-paid people that do a very good job in this state and make good money. So for our industry and for the good of our industry, and as you well know, when you start looking around town, all these mom-and-pop places that are open up, a lot of young guys and gals that work for me, work for other people, they're starting their own businesses, they're working hard, but labor kills. Thanks. If you have any questions about how this all works, again, you know, when you look at it, we pay taxes on their declared tips. 30 years ago when I got in this godforsaken business, 80% of all transactions were cash. Now, 80% of all transactions are credit cards. So every dime that you spend, by law, on your sales, you have to claim a minimum of 8%. But true to the Internal Revenue Service, you have to claim 100% of what you make, not 8%. So now, with 80% of the transactions on credit cards, there's no way of skimming the money off the top like we used to do years ago. We have to pay it all, and that's what's happening. So when a waitress or a waiter or a bartender or whatever, when they get done paying their at the end of their pay period, they've got to pay taxes on that. So that's where we're at today. Thanks for your time. If you have any questions, you certainly can give me a call anytime at the Loon Cafe. I'm always around. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Would anybody else like to testify? Yes. Sir in the yellow, please come down. Okay, you'll be next up, okay? Thank you. Sir, welcome to the committee.
Good afternoon. I was going to bring my two-year-old, but it was a little too chilly today. I left her at home. My name is Bob Beyer. I own Main Street Bar and Grill in Hopkinton. I'm obviously speaking in favor of this bill. I didn't plan on talking today, but after hearing all these other people speak, I felt a need to come up here and say my piece. I bought a business about 10 years ago. I worked in the industry as a bartender, a server, for many, many years, working other jobs as well. I drove ambulance for a good 10 years, and I always wanted to have my own business, and I had this opportunity about 10 years ago, borrowed from everybody I could to buy this business, and I ran it fairly successfully for the last 10 years now. Didn't pay myself for the first 6 months, toiled for the first 6 months to get my feet on the ground with this business, and you know, we've made a respectable living since that. With this, with our current climate in our industry right now, it's difficult to make a buck. I have two young children. Started that late in life as well. I have a 2- and a 5-year-old, and I would like to raise them as best I can too. But with every increase in wage that we have to pay our tipped employees, it makes it more and more difficult for us. And as some of the other restaurant owners have told us, it's going to take a big chunk. It took out probably about $20,000 to $25,000 out of our bottom line this last year, and I continually try to make improvements in my business and update things, and it cuts back from me being able to do that, as well as with my back of the house people. One gentleman states that it doesn't affect the back of the house what they do make. One of my employees, I gave a raise to this last week, a 50-cent an hour raise, and he says, well, could I get a dollar an hour raise? And I would have gladly wanted to give him a dollar an hour raise, but with this upcoming raise in minimum wage, I'm not able to do that. And it really does have an effect on the business, and I want to stay in business. I want to raise my kids the best I can to, you know, so I can provide for them. And it is creating such a much more difficult strain on our business to do this, and we have to make decisions that that I don't want to have to make, and I want to provide for these people in the back of the house too, and I would really want to give them a raise if I can. So I mean, that's about all I have to say, and I just support what our industry is trying to do here, and if we can have that tip tier to get these people up to $12 an hour, and for those people who aren't getting that. That's what we're trying to do here. We're trying to say, okay, if they're not getting that $4 an hour tip, then we need to you know, give them that their minimum wage for $9 an hour. But thank you.
Thank you very much. Ma'am, come on down.
Thank you. I thought I was on the list. Thank you for your time.
All right. Welcome. Please introduce yourself.
My name is Joy Anderson. I'm 58 years old, and I work as a server in Minneapolis. Being a server is hard work. It's a physical job that requires good communication skills, diplomacy, and a lot of multitasking. It's not a glamorous job, but it pays the bills. And I'm here because every time the minimum wage comes up, there are some people who seem to think that servers like me make too much money and want to penalize us for earning tips. I drive a 2001 Saturn and live in a fixer-upper in northeast Minneapolis that will probably never be fixed up. That's fine. But because Minnesota has a strong minimum wage and a booming hospitality industry, two things which seem to go hand in hand when you look at the statistics, We are able to pay our property taxes, our heat bills, our other utilities. I can go to the chiropractor when I need to, buy healthy food at the grocery store, and really live a pretty good life. And I'm sure that back when the states around Minnesota, like Wisconsin, went to a two-tiered minimum wage, one for tipped employees and one for non-tipped employees, the gap probably didn't seem that big at the time. But over time, that gap grows. And as you've heard, right now, the minimum wage for servers in Wisconsin is $2.33 an hour. And I wish you could talk to more servers who worked in Wisconsin and now work in Minnesota. There's a huge difference. And as you've heard, there's so many things that affect a server's income, the weather, for one. Having a strong minimum wage helps servers and other tipped employees to be able to support themselves and their families and not have to rely on public assistance. I am so proud to be a Minnesotan. I am proud that our legislators raised the minimum wage last year for everyone. I'm sure it is part of the reason Minnesota's economy and hospitality industry are so strong. We have good jobs here and people have some money to spend. I urge you not to let our state go backwards. I hope you will vote to stop this bill in its tracks. Please don't make it harder for people, your fellow citizens like me, to be able to earn a living. I urge you to please vote to keep our minimum wage strong and to keep Minnesota's economy growing. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Seeing no other public hands or anything, I'm going to close the public hearing at this point, and I will move the discussion now back to Representative Graffel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Before I answer any questions from members of the committee, I do want to thank members of the public and everyone for a well-informed debate on this. As we begin this process, I look forward to the opportunity of having a bipartisan majority in support of this bill. And again, nothing's going to become law this year unless we have the support of both majority Republicans and Senate majority DFLers, as well as Governor Dayton. That's the only way a bill becomes a law. I do want to make sure that a couple of points that were brought up in testimony were addressed. First of all, there was a figure of $8.68 an hour that was used. And whether that figure is valid or not, I just want to make very clear. This bill only applies to those who are already making in excess of $12 an hour. That is who this applies to. So if that number is accurate, if people aren't making $9 or $10 an hour, they will still get the full increase in the minimum wage that is scheduled to go into effect on August 1st. Second of all, is I think it's important to look at this public policy through the dynamic, not as a single issue, but of what else has happened, particularly through the lens of metro area versus greater Minnesota. Through the last couple of years, there's been a lot of burdens put on our hospitality industry, bars and restaurants. The Affordable Care Act has become law with a requirement on employers. In addition, a couple of years ago, a smoking ban was passed. And while that smoking ban certainly may be popular in the metro area, we have the data to show that there are far higher smoking rates and they affect in greater Minnesota for those industries. And third and finally is the issue of higher food prices, which really don't have anything to do with this committee, but it's important to realize that, is that these policies do not take place in a vacuum, but they are there are other options. So again, members, I want to make sure we understand that that this is about protecting jobs, that if we're going to continue with the policies we have right now, we will see a continued migration away from table service towards fast casual and towards quick service. That will mean fewer employees. In addition, it will accelerate the trend we've already seen towards the automation. Anyone who goes to the airport has seen iPads in place that have been used to replace people. And so with Mr. Chairman, with that, I'm happy to take any questions from members of the committee.
Thank you, Representative Graffalo. We have got a couple members with questions. Representative Metza.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a couple, I guess, procedural questions to start with. I know this bill took a hop through quite a few different committees, and right now my understanding is the motion is to have it go to the general registrar. I think there's some tax issues involved with the bill, with the way it was written, as well as some commerce issues, and I was wondering if the author intended on having the bill stop at either of those committees.
Representative Graffel.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Metza, first of all, I'll take the easy one, the commerce issue. It is correct that the minimum wage increase went through the Commerce Committee on the last session, but the structure of the committees have been redesigned. The Department of Labor, Industry, Policy, and Finance is contained in this committee, so the Department of Commerce, Commerce Department is not seeing this bill. With regards to the tax issue, I'm not aware of what...
Sorry, members, excuse me. Want to check the mic there? Thank you. Representative.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Metz, I'm not aware of any tax issues. I've discussed the issue with the chairman of the tax committee. He has not brought up the need to see this, but of course, if the chair of the committee has to see it, then of course I would support a re-referral motion.
Representative Metz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Can I have a little latitude here and go into some other questions I have as well?
Regarding this bill?
Yes, regarding this
sure.
bill. Thank you, Mr.
Just for
Chair.
The record, Mr. Chairman, yes. If he said no, he'd still do it anyway, so it doesn't really matter.
That's why I figured I better say yes. He's got a new pair of glasses on today. I want to make sure that he gets a lot of attention today. So, Representative, you look very nice in those
Thank
glasses,
you, Mr. Chair. I had to copy Ben Gerber at the Chamber of Commerce with that. So I did have a quick question. Is anyone here from Department of Labor and Industry?
Is there someone here? Yes.
I saw him here. That was more rhetorical. A little warning okay. for him.
Please introduce yourself for the record.
Members, Mr. Chair, John Rakuski with the Department of Labor and Industry.
Representative Metz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is there going to be an added enforcement cost? How do we keep track of which businesses every pay period? I'm assuming a lot of businesses have a lot of different pay periods. How do you intend on enforcing so we can avoid things like wage theft and
Representative Metz,
should this become
Mr.
law?
Chairman,
yep.
We regulate, as you know from your our agency and our budget overviews, our wage and hour division of our labor standards unit has six people to enforce Chapter 177 and 181, which deals with workplace and employment issues for 1.5 million workers. So when you talk about enforcement, from a practical reason, we try to inform and we send out educate. Conform and educate letters to employers when we get complaints. So our enforcement is based on complaints.
And Mr. Chairman, Representative Metz, if I could just defer to staff, is there a fiscal note on this bill?
Members, currently there is no fiscal note request, but I think that is a good idea to get one.
Representative Gruffalo?
Okay, well, I submitted a request. I was wondering if one has come back yet.
Members of the committee, no.
Okay. Representative Metz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I guess that kind of leads into, I think you saw where I headed with that. There's going to be extra cost for enforcement, in my opinion, in this piece of legislation. And, you know, one of our last testifiers skimming a little off the top, I don't know if I would want to call my boss and knowing that they could be skimming a little off the top for tip penalty. Call in and assuming he's got that line of people looking for a job after he's done, as he was stating in his testimony. So I guess I'll move in. That's good enough for you, John. You're off the hook for now.
Thank you.
At least for me.
Speak in front of us.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative Metz. Next up, Representative Fortman. Oh, I'm sorry, Representative Metz.
Yeah, I had a few more questions. Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, this started out a bad idea is a bad idea to me, Representative Garofalo, and this has been tossed around. Former representative from my region was chair back when this went on. I think it was either Representative Clark or was it Representative Kahn that originally got rid of the tip penalty?
Mr. Chair, if I'm
being Representative Clark.
I think it was Representative Murphy.
Or Murphy, it might have been. Okay.
Representative Metz.
So I think Minnesota has a long history, anyway, the point I'm trying to make, of opposing this legislation because Minnesotans don't believe in a tip penalty. And, you know, the labor and food rising costs we talked about today, you know, some of those things we talked about in our last committee hearings and specifically addressing Mr. Fong's statements. We can't freeze the price of groceries for the employees either. We can't, you know, freeze the cost of child care, those other things. And so to freeze the wages just for tipped employees, I mean, we're talking about restaurant workers here. You know, kind of what comes to my mind is the dock boy making a few dollars an hour in the summer. You know, does this put them in a permanent position where they're always going to get paid less regardless of what the wage rises to in Minnesota here? Are we looking at different sectors in the hospitality industry that this could affect? So I'm getting asked by the chair indirectly to roll this along. Anyway, I'll leave you with this. A bad idea is a bad idea, and I don't know why a tip penalty now is necessary for you to do. Do you have the governor's support in this, Representative?
Representative Garofalo.
Mr. Speaker, Representative Betza, number one, I'm willing to work with the governor and any members on the other side of the aisle to help this become law. I recognize the compromise is part of that process. The governor tends to be a reasonable man on a lot of issues, so I look forward to working with him. But I do want to address one point you said, Representative Metza, and that you said a bad idea is a bad idea. I do think it's important to point out that the minimum wage bill that passed last session by a DFL House, DFL Senate, signed by a DFL governor, actually has the very provisions that I'm talking about. And I would highlight, point to you on page 2, is a complete bill of 1027. You can see the existing language that's in law. On paragraph D, there is a special rate for a lower minimum wage for hotel, motel, lodging establishment, or resorts where the employee is receiving other benefits. And my understanding is that provision was actually put in place at the behest of Northern Minnesota legislators. So we actually already do this in law. The question is, are we going to have this apply at a $12 an hour floor across the state, or are we going to allow this opportunity for certain businesses that have access to the legislature? So I'm surprised to hear you say it's a bad idea, because again, that's something that was put in law, and if there's a problem with that section of law, then maybe as this bill moves forward, we'll be taking a look at that.
Representative Betza.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I actually wouldn't mind taking a look at that and getting it out, so I'll take you up on that.
All right. Anything else, Representative Betza?
That'll be it for now.
Representative Horton. Hartman. Excuse me.
Hartman, we got it.
Hartman, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question is for Mr. Varco, if he's still in the room. Mr. Varco testified about some statistics relating to the proportion of the economy that goes to wage-earning workers. And while he's finding those numbers on the proportion of the economy that's going to wage-earning workers and can give us some historical reference, I want to ask the Chair, Representative Garofalo, in terms of the functioning of this bill. So the way that I read it, a person's wage would change every pay period? Is that what your intention is?
Representative Garofalo.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Horton, what would happen is that...
Did you just call me Representative Horton?
No, Representative Hartman.
There you go.
What? I've known you for 10 years. I know how to say your name, right?
Well, Lord. No, that's why I was so surprised, Pat.
Representative Hartman, maybe it's your hearing over there. I'm not sure, but anyway, Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Representative Hartman.
Thank you. It's better.
So what this does is to make sure that, because let's say a person has one a really positive week in terms of tips, there's a lot of growth. We don't want to have that opportunity taken away from them. So again, they would have to earn over or less than $12 an hour, make over $12 an hour to have this provision apply to it every 2-week pay period.
Representative Hartman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Garofalo. So the way this would work in practice, let's say I'm the restaurant owner and you're the employee, you're going to indicate to me every 2 weeks how much your average tips are, and we're going to recalculate your wage.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hartman, that happens already today. That's why we heard the employers talking about. They actually pay payroll taxes on these tips already, so yes.
Representative Hartman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Garofalo. And so if you were to receive some cash tips that would tip you over the top into a reduced hourly wage, are you inclined to share that information with your employer? I mean, I think the way that this is structured, where if your wages will decrease if you honestly report all of your tips, that it kind of builds in an incentive for an employee to not be truthful, doesn't it?
Representative Garofalo.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hartman, I know that every single member of the public who participates in a tip situation receives tips honestly and accurately reports every single dollar of tip income they get. Mm-hmm. And I would expect that to be the same way under this bill.
Representative Hartman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Garofalo. The other thing I was wondering is, if somebody's going in to get a mortgage from a bank, is this kind of income going to be something that a banker can write a mortgage on? Because wouldn't it vary then?
Representative Garofalo.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hartman, no different than with tipped income right now. Again, the person would have to be making over $12 an hour to apply. Under federal tax law, These are automatically added to their W-2 statements. Employers and employees are already paying Social Security taxes as well as Medicare taxes on these incomes. The only change is going to be that if they are over $12 or under $12, there is a we're calculating this in the form of the minimum wage.
Representative Portman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Varco, I don't know if you had an opportunity to find the part of your testimony where you referred to the amount of the economic growth that's going to wage-earning employees.
Yeah, I have the chart here. I'm trying to figure out who it's from. I got it from Wikipedia, I have to admit. It shows the percentage of the economy measured by gross domestic product that goes to wages, and it compares the United States, Japan, I think the Federal Republic of Germany, the EU 15, and I think it's the East Asian 12. So they take each one of these groupings, and it goes from about 1960 up to today. The U.S. led all of the other countries in 1960, except for Japan, which is way off the map, and not sure why that is. But we led all of those other countries and groupings of countries in 1960, and we have steadily declined, where we are now, of all of those economic groupings, the economy that devotes the lowest percentage or share of their total gross domestic product to worker wages and benefits.
Representative Portman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, Representative Garofalo, I think that Mr. Varco's data kind of points up something we all know that's happening in the economy, and that is that people feel like they're not getting by anymore, and we're seeing mean wages frozen for working families, and we're not seeing the kind of increases. And so in this environment, it seems particularly counterproductive to have a bill that will have the effect of freezing the wages of a workforce that is 70% female, that is twice as likely to be living in poverty as the average population, and then freeze their wages. Mr. McElroy indicated that he believes the back of the house staff won't get raises because the front of the house staff gets raises. But when you look at the data from the other states that have a tip penalty, Wisconsin, Iowa, South Dakota, North Dakota, they all have tip penalties, and they actually don't pay the back of the house staff any better. In Minnesota, we had substantial growth in the restaurant industry in November, and we just had our new minimum wage kick in August of this year. So I think that the sky is falling kind of arguments that were made during that debate haven't come to pass, and the minimum wage has put money in people's pockets, and I don't think we should take it back out.
I just want to point out we've got two questions left from the members. We're going to wrap up in about 2 minutes, so if we have to recess, we will be going till room 200 today at 6 or 6:30. So we'll call for another meeting as well. But next up is Representative Isaacson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As many of you may know, I've been on record supporting the tip credit and really have struggled with this issue greatly. I have seen, and you know, where my local restaurants are dealing with, and I've seen what the servers are dealing with. And you know, I have to be honest with you. I'm frustrated, and I just want to apologize to the entire group that's here today that you get to watch this comedy occur. The reality is this bill isn't about getting anything done on the tip credit one way or the other. This bill is about both sides playing to their base to make sure that we can receive our votes and that kind of stuff during the electoral process, and that's the part that really frustrates the crap out of me in watching this. There is a very specific slice of servers and restaurants, if you look at the research without the political lens on, that clearly needs some sort of or can do some sort of tip service credit, and there is a larger portion of the restaurant industry that shouldn't. But when you look at the reality of it is that, and as a server myself, having made very good wages, and then looking at the reality of the restaurant associations report themselves of having record sales in the next year and record profits, it's hard for me to justify why we would be going after this. And so then I have to ask the question, why are we having this discussion? We've got incredibly important things going on across the state that we're dealing with, and we're going to argue about a couple bucks an hour or a buck an hour on a minimum wage, which I don't doubt that the restaurants work hard for. But what we're doing here, this bill has no chance of passing. Are you kidding me? There's no way the governor's going to sign this, and there's no way the Senate's going to pass it. And so instead we're sitting here having this discussion in which we get to ask a bunch of math questions and talk about wages and figure things out and look at people with babies and have this discussion, and we're posturing. That's all this is posturing. We just spent the last 2.5 hours posturing to our bases. And it makes me very frustrated to watch. And I have to be honest with you that I don't support this bill because this bill is a joke. No offense, Representative Garofalo, I have a great respect for you and your intentions on this bill, but I don't support this bill because the bill doesn't actually solve the problem that the tiered income should be solving. It doesn't get to that. And the fact that it even offers, or could, and I'm not sure, maybe Representative Garofalo can enlighten me on this, but if it even possibly includes baristas, then we've completely missed the mark. At the same time, there's an area where this type of bill could do some good for small businesses, like Mancetti's and Little Venetian in my district, that I care about and want to be successful. But it's a frustration to me when I watch us have these discussions and carry on and talk about where the business industry's at and how the restaurant owners are just suffering when I look at the reports that are quite clear that you are clearly not suffering. Now, individual businesses might be, but the restaurant industry as a whole is having record profits. And I struggle with my union friends that come in and say what I think to be somewhat of an intellectually dishonest argument that we're somehow reaping rewards for free off the back of backs of servers, which you're not. Those two arguments don't work for me. So I'm going to be unpopular with everybody in the room now. That's really awesome. I'm glad I can alienate both sides of it. I respect and love both sides, but we're not being clear. We're not being truthful, and this is why people hate politics, is because we have to have hearings like this on bills that will never go anywhere, but we get to posture to our bases. And that frustrates the crap out of me. So I'd like to apologize to the group, and I'd rather just get this vote over with and move on to something more meaningful.
Thank you, Representative Isaacson. Representative Garofalo.
Just three quick points to my friend, Representative Isaacson. Number one, this is not a base that is. This is not a bill that's appealing to each political base. I'll point out to the Representative Isaacson, there's six authors in this bill. Three are DFL, three are GOP. Second of all, with regards to the fact, your statement that this bill has no chance of passing, I would simply say that you are simply not in possession of all the facts at this time to make that decision. Third and finally, I look forward to you being involved in the process, and if there are ways that we can approve this bill to address your concerns so we can help these small businesses, make sure that people preserve and keep their jobs, and we don't force the businesses to migrate to from a table service to a fast casual or quick service mentality, I look forward to working with you on that.
Thank you. I also was just given the word that we could stay in the room for another 10 minutes, and we do have two more members on the list to ask a question. So if it's all right with the members, I'd like to be able to continue on for 10 minutes, and we hopefully will be able to take a vote. So Representative Johnson, you're up now, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. At the risk of frustrating Representative Isaacson, I do want to make a few comments, and I'm speaking my truth, and I'm not speaking to the base. It's what I believe to be true, and I don't think I could speak more eloquently than the servers that came before us. And I also appreciated the hospitality workers, or these hospitality industry's comments as well. One of the things that struck me, you know, as a fact, the fact is that since the minimum wage went up in August of 2014, there hasn't been a job-killing effect, and we have 4,700 more jobs in the industries. And that's a fact. I mean, that's not just made up. So I think you have to be careful of the anecdotes you get from the hospitality and restaurant industry sometimes about this, that, and the other thing, and really state to what in fact is true. A truth for me is that reducing the hourly wage through the tip penalty of low-income workers is clearly the wrong path. That's not where we should be going, is going after low-income workers. This is neither the time in our society or in our economics where that makes sense. The wage gap is a real thing, poverty is a real thing, and we should be addressing that in a way that improves it, not makes more problems, as this bill does. And then just the last truth for me is that low-wage workers don't need a lower wage, they need an increase in pay. That's the direction we should be going, not the direction that's provided in this bill. The questions that have been asked are the ones I had, so I have no questions. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, and Representative Simonson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and a number of my questions have been asked already too, but I do have one that remains, and I was listening intently to the testimony, and I forgot to write the name down, but one of the testifiers spoke to the fact that a certain percentage of her tips went here and a certain percentage of it went there, and at the end of the year It added up to, I want to say, $5,000 or $6,000 that she paid out of her tips to different areas. So I'm curious if Representative Garofalo can speak to that, because I want to understand more about how that process works. And in addition to that, I also want to ask about the term pooling of tips, because I think I heard that at least once, if not twice today, and the fact that it was, I think it was made note of that it was illegal. And just help me understand the relationship between tip pooling and then what that testifier was speaking about, if you could.
Representative Garofalo.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Simonson, your recollection is correct that forced pooling of tips, required pooling of tips, is illegal under Minnesota law. Obviously, there are certain customs and traditions at some hospitality establishments where they do that to reward the back of the building employees, but that is illegal under Minnesota law to force employees to pool their tips. Second of all, I think you were alluding to the credit card transaction fee. Is that the provision you were talking about with regards to the
Representative Simonson?
No,
Representative.
And so that for the costs of the transaction, the employer is allowed to do that. But again, the forced pooling side, that is not allowed under Minnesota law.
Representative Simonson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Garofalo. So as I understand it, pooling, as was described by the testifier, then would be illegal under current Minnesota law. So it's
Representative Garofalo.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Simonson, yes, and I can't make it double illegal, but it's, you know, it's already against law.
Representative Simonson.
And to that point, Mr. Chair and Representative Garofalo, have you thought, because I heard a lot today about this discrepancy between the front of the house and the back of the house, and it's something that I've talked to some excellent restaurant owners in my district about over the last couple of years, about this discrepancy and how you really go about fixing it. And I think that if we peel the politics aside, we could probably have a great discussion about some things that we could do that could be better for all the employees in the restaurant industry. But have you thought, as you put together your bill, about this discrepancy and how to fix that? Because I think we heard a number of comments that, you know, if we were to pass this bill and it gets signed into law, that it will allow restaurant owners to somehow shift more dollars to the back of the house. But I don't think there's anything in your bill that does that, so I would label that as anecdotal. But what are your thoughts about how we do address that discrepancy?
Representative Garofalo.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Simonson, as I said before, rarely is there only one way to solve a problem, and I'm interested in hearing any conversations people may have about moving the ball forward and solving these problems.
Representative Simonson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And one last question, and I'll wrap up. But why did you settle, Representative Garofalo, why did you settle on a number of $8 an hour to essentially freeze it at, rather than tie it to, you know, the language in the bill about the minimum wage as it goes up at different points in time?
Representative Garofalo.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Simonson, $8 is what the current law is. But, again, I'm willing to have a conversation about that going forward.
And one moment. So we've got three members that have questions yet, Clark, Metza, and Fabian.
Mr. Chairman, if members wish to come back at 6:30, then
yeah,
we'll just do that.
That's what I want to give them the option to do that.
We
want
to give them a chance to see if they don't want to.
So Representative Clark, would you like to just reschedule and come back at later this evening? Is that something you want to do, Representative?
Mr. Chairman, it's okay with me. My question has partly been asked, but I would like to. I still have a question.
Sure. I'm going to hope that we can get this done in 5 minutes. So why don't you just go ahead and ask the question?
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I do appreciate all the testimony. There was a point that was made by one of the restaurant owners. I believe it was Tim Mahoney, who talked about the more people paying credit cards. And I know that there is this practice that some restaurant owners have of charging the wait persons with the cost of the transaction, and I don't know how common that is, but I'm wondering how that's taken into account. Representative Garofalo, if you could tell me, is that, because that can be a significant impact on the wage, I'd assume.
Representative Garofalo.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Representative Clark, that is the practice that the employers are allowed to do that. The costs that are associated with the credit card transaction fee to require the server to pay for that.
So, Mr. Chairman,
yes, Representative
Garofalo, is that, sorry, I can't really see you very well, is that taken into account in your, the scale here that you put together in the figures that you've created in this bill? Is that considered?
Representative Garofalo.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Clark, no, because not every employer does that. But I think, again, that's an issue that I'd be willing to have a conversation about.
Okay. Representative Metza.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think I'll take you up on your offer to come back a little later. I've got quite a few questions.
We can sure do that.
Next member.
So what we'll do is we have Metza and Fabian so far up for questions. We are going to stand in recess at this point, so we're not going to gavel out. But what we'll do is we'll come back at either 6 or 6:30, room 200, and that'll be announced on your email for members. So at this time, I want to thank everybody for their testimony today, and we will reconvene at committee stands in recess until 6 or 6:30. Thank you. Give me my pen back. Sorry, I took yours.
All right, good to see you.
Okay. You know how this. I nailed it, by the way. I recall quite a few evenings.
Even a voluntary thing. Because
you were honest.
Be honest. Be frank with your own. Be honest. Because that indicates.
I will reconvene our meeting from earlier today. Again, we're back in the Jobs and Growth, Energy, Affordable Policy, and Finance. We still have two members, and we're revisiting again or just continuing the discussion about House File 1027, introduced by Representative Garofalo. Our next question is for Representative Metza. He's not here right now. We'll skip him, and let's go to Fabian for your question, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And it was just a clarification to Representative Simonson's questions about the pooling. Just wanted to clarify that, you know, if employees voluntarily pool their tips and so forth, is that legal?
Representative Garofalo.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Fabian, of course, we can't legislate in law that if a person voluntarily gives their money to a coworker, we can't prohibit that, nor should we. I think a lot of places it's custom that they do that. However, it is against the law to force workers to share their tipped earnings.
Representative Hortman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Do we have any nonpartisan research staff here, or do we expect them? Because I have a question about that pooled tip credit. The woman who testified seemed to indicate that was a practice where she gave a certain percentage of her tips to the other servers or wait staff, and I'm wondering if that is a different issue than the pooled. Mm-hmm. Maybe Representative Garofalo, you can enlighten me about what is a pooled tip as opposed to dividing your tip with the sushi chef.
Sure.
Representative Garofalo.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Horton. Again, Hortman. I actually did it that time. You're right. Representative Hortman. Any transaction involving that is voluntary. It has to be voluntary under state law. Sharing their tips, providing incentives to coworkers, that is all 100% voluntary. The act of pooling, if it's done voluntarily, that's fine. But at no point can an employer or coworkers demand that employees share their wages with other employees. It's very cut and dry in law.
Representative Hartman?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Garofalo, so just to make sure I understand you, it is permissible, it's not forbidden, but it cannot be required.
Representative Garofalo.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hortman, It is permissible to voluntarily share, but it is prohibited to require it.
And I think I just, if I can add one more thing too, as an operator, there are some team serving that happens. Again, as the testifier earlier had mentioned, sometimes they share voluntarily. Some of their tips go to a bartender who works carefully and swiftly to get the drinks out. So there is some voluntary sharing that does happen in the bars and restaurants. Totally up to that team that's on board, and that's how that kind of works, at least in my restaurant. So back to your question. I'm sorry, Representative Fortman.
Well, thank you. I'm done with that question. I just had a different question about the committee path that this bill is on. Mr. Chair, do you expect that there is going to be a tax implication of this bill? I have a hard time imagining how your bill does not raise or lower the amount of revenue that comes into the state of Minnesota.
Representative Ruffalo.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hortman, my recollection is that there was no fiscal note when the minimum wage bill passed. I do not have a fiscal note on this bill yet. If there is one, obviously that would have to be taken into account. But we requested a fiscal note a while back, and there wasn't one. If I'm wrong about the minimum wage having a fiscal note, I'm sorry, but that was my recollection. But again, if there's a fiscal note, there's a fiscal note. If there isn't, there isn't.
Mr. Chair, Representative Portman. There was a fiscal note on the minimum wage, but I believe it related to state employees who were not tipped employees. But I also imagine that there is a tax issue, and I don't remember, you know, a fiscal note is, does it cost the state government more money, right? Do we as an employer have to pay an employee more in wages? So that's a fiscal note. But then a revenue estimate would tell us whether the state should receive more or less tax revenue as a result of this bill. And if this bill, I would imagine the restaurateurs don't want it unless it reduces costs for them. If it reduces costs for them, then it's reducing wages to employees, so it has to have a revenue associated with it or the restaurateurs wouldn't want it. So what I'm wondering is, shouldn't this bill go to the tax committee next?
Representative Ruffalo.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hortman, 2 points. Number one, if there is a revenue note, if a revenue note is produced, then it would go to the, I believe it would go to the tax committee. We do not have a revenue note. I don't anticipate there will be one, but if there is one, we will. Second of all is the issue of, remember that in our tax committee and in Minnesota, we do not use dynamic scoring. We use static scoring. And so if we were using dynamic scoring, one could argue that jobs are being saved, that we are reducing the number of jobs that would be switched over to iPads, or that we would account for the income gains that would take place for other employees, or we may see additional sales because food products would be more affordable. We do not have that. We have static scoring in Minnesota. How that affects this bill, again, I would just tell you that historically, we don't guess on what this stuff is. We rely on the revenue notes and the fiscal notes that we have, and we have neither of those for this bill.
Representative Fortman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question for nonpartisan staff, Ms. Nauman. Is it now? I can't see it from here. Newman. And my question is, how would we go about getting a revenue estimate on this bill?
Ms. Newman.
Mr. Chair and Representative Portman, I'm going to defer to Harriet Hendricks, the fiscal analyst.
Thank you.
Ms. Hendricks.
Members of the committee, Chair, currently we have a fiscal note request outstanding that has not been completed as of today. There is, we hopefully get it this week. There was a fiscal note on the bill last year that with the minimum wage, there was a cost estimate from the Labor Department of Labor and Industry for notification of employees of the new minimum wage, particularly related to the indexing. I currently don't know have any information from either the Department of Labor and Industry or any other agencies of potential costs. There was no tax revenue estimate for that bill, and it did not go to the tax committee. So it went through this Jobs and Economic Development Committee, Commerce, Policy and Finance Committee, and Ways and Means.
Representative Portman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Hendricks?
Hendricks.
With a D or without a D?
With a D.
With a D. Hendricks. Ms. Hendricks. So what is the procedure for requesting a revenue estimate? Does it have to be the tax chair who requests a revenue estimate, and does the bill have to be in the possession of the tax committee to request a revenue estimate, or can any member request a revenue estimate on a bill?
Ms. Hendricks.
members of the committee. Any member could let fiscal staff know that they want a revenue estimate on the bill, and then I would, if you came to me, I would defer to the fiscal analyst on the tax committees and have them do that and put in a request. But yes, any member could express that request.
Representative Hartman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. We'll go back to Representative Metsa.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess looking at the historical precedents over the last few years, we had a miniature bill that had a similar fiscal implication in regards to the federal conformity and the tax credit that was called back into taxes. If this had the same, Representative Garofalo, same implications, would you be willing for this bill to go to taxes?
Representative Garofalo.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Metsa, the two-tiered minimum wage is not MNsure. It does not have interaction with the Affordable Care Act. As with any finance committee, I'm going to defer to the judgment of the chair of that committee, as well as for to find out if we have a revenue note on it. As you've heard in the past, there hasn't been one. But if there are tax consequences, that has to be accounted for in someone's budget.
Representative Metsa.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And in regard to a question I had asked earlier, would you be willing, should the Department of Labor and Industry come out with a statement to fund extra employees to make sure that we're keeping the wages and businesses and the process which you're proposing in check and making sure that it's fair and transparent for both the business owners and the employees by allowing Dolly to have a few extra employees to make sure with that monitoring?
Representative Garofalo.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Metsa, fiscal notes are advisory in nature. They're not a mandate for the legislature to accept them. In order to answer your question, I would have to see the text and contents of a fiscal note that I do not have.
Representative Metsa.
That's it, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Vaginius.
Thank you. And thanks for the break so we could think about your bill.
You bet. Hopefully it changed your mind.
Mm-hmm. Here's what I've been thinking about. If we are reducing the wages of some folks, and that means we are reducing the number of people in the middle class. And it seems to me that our job should be promoting the expansion of the middle class, not reducing it. So in the big picture, I don't know why this legislature would go on record saying we're going to diminish the number of people in the middle class, because it seems to me that's exactly what this bill does.
Representative Garofalo.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Vaginius, again, just repeating something over and over doesn't make something true. And so I want to be very crystal clear about what the this bill does. People have all day been using the term tip credit and tip penalty. Those are laws in other states where tip wages are used to get to the minimum wage level. This bill does not do that. That is not what this bill does. This bill says that if you are in excess of $12, higher than the current minimum wage, higher than the minimum wage is forecast to be at the end of this year or next year, if that is the case, then you have the $8 an hour minimum wage. There is no penalty. There is no tip credit. It is the fact of the matter is it only applies to those who are making over $12 an hour. So when you suggest that we are reducing wages or reducing the ranks of the middle class, that is not true. A second point I would point out is that you have heard testimony today which shows you that we are building an incentive into the hospitality industry to automate. This is already taking place. Anyone who goes to the airport can go to the F gates and see the iPads where the number of servers working has been reduced. Now, we're also seeing the type of a change in dining service that instead of sit-down, it's moving to the walk-up tables. And we are inadvertently or accidentally incentivizing this. And this is a trend that has been occurring. They have the numbers to prove that. So I think protecting jobs from automation, keeping the government out of the business of incentivizing a business model with fewer employees I think that's good for the middle class. I think that's good for employees. And I think it's good for the people who have made investments in these small mom-and-pop shops. Again, a large corporate outfit, you know, like a nationwide chain, it's probably not that big of a deal to them. They buy their stuff in bulk. They've got more flexibility. But really, we have a long tradition in Minnesota of doing things the Minnesota way. And this is a very unique proposal. No other state is like it. And again, it only affects you, affects people who are over $12 an hour. But Representative Vigenius, if it's a philosophical objection you have, if this bill was said that you had an $8 an hour minimum wage if you made $50 an hour, I can't solve that, that you would still oppose that. I can't solve that problem. But if you're saying to me is that you don't like how the bill is structured, you recognize there's a problem and you'd like to assist, I would invite you to join that conversation, and I'm open to ideas that will come from the DFL party, because again, this bill will not become law unless there's DFL support.
Representative Wagenius.
When I talked, I didn't mention the word tip credit or any of the other catchphrases. That wasn't what I was talking about. I was talking about the practical fact of folks with less wages. That's all I was talking about. But your response to me brings up an interesting dilemma for this legislature. We don't want to go to automation. That's the message here. However, in the ag bills, we subsidize automation so that a dairy farmer can have a robot or robotics or whatever you call it. So to be consistent, I hope that we don't do that this year. Maybe let's be consistent. We're reducing the number of jobs per acre on farms and doing it with robots, when indeed maybe the best thing would be to increase the jobs per acre. So let's just be consistent if we're going to make that argument.
Representative Metza.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Garofalo, you had just pointed out that it was down to minimum wage. I'd just like to correct for the public record that the tip credit being proposed would bring it down to lower than the minimum wage. Will be.
Representative Garofalo?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Metza, what are you talking about?
Representative Metza.
We can just ask Representative Hortman to answer the question. That'll work fine, too.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Garofalo, she is pointing out I said tip credit, not tip penalty, which I do need correction on that. It is more of a penalty than a credit. However, you had just said in one of your previous statements that that would bring it down to $8 at the current minimum wage level. I just wanted to point out that it would be going to $9.50 and be below the minimum wage level thereafter.
Mr. Chairman, Representative
Garofalo.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Metza, the employee is making over $12 an hour. So that is above the minimum wage. Is there a dispute in this committee about that 12 is more than 8 or 9? I'm confused by the logic, Representative Metza.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, I think there is a dispute there. It's what the employer pays someone and what a willing patron of that employer gives to the waiter or waitress. And I would say that's a big discrepancy. They could go home with zero.
Representative Garofalo.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Metza, if that's the case, they get the $9. This only affects them if they're making over $12 an hour. So I'll ask you again, I guess, what is the point you're trying to make, because I don't understand it.
Representative Metza.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The point I'm trying to make is that it's a tip penalty, and that at the end of the day, no matter what way we can slice and dice this, we've heard testimony earlier that there used to be the good old days of skimming off the top and no one would worry about it. I think that comment in particular was taken a little out of context, even by myself right now. I don't think the intent of the commenter was to say that he was scamming the state. I think he was trying to make a point saying that things were a little different
the rules were a little different. Right now, we have iPads that keep track of everything, computers that keep track of everything, with all these automated systems. What we want to keep track of is fairness, and ultimately, fairness needs to be provided in a base wage to someone who has worked, as we heard in our previous testimony, from many folks in the service industry that, you know, you could get called in for a wait shift, but you're hosting or you're washing dishes, trying to help the employer make ends meet, which all good employees do, I think. But point being that the minimum wage should not be less for that person, which, by the way, I was out at a little dinner in between here at a nicer restaurant in St. Paul, where I did talk to my server and asked if they wanted their wage free, their wage freezed at $8 an hour. What is a salt place down by the Red Cow?
Salt Cellar.
Salt Cellar. All of the waitresses that I talked to there, and it was only waitresses, not waiters, that I encountered in my visit, made good tips and did support not having a tip penalty. So would be in opposition to your bill, and they are from a good restaurant here that does probably garner some pretty good tips judging by the menu prices there. And my main point again being that we need to treat people fairly. We can't do that by putting a penalty on their wages.
Representative Portman.
I believe Representative Brock was.
Did you want to respond to that, Representative Brock?
Yeah, this, Mr. Chairman, Representative Metza, I just, using your language, not mine, do you consider, you know, existing law lines 2.13 through 2.22, do you consider that, again, using your language, do you consider that a tip penalty and, quote, unfair, end quote?
Representative Metza.
Mr. Chair, without looking at it, are you referring to what you referred to earlier in terms of the small business?
Representative Grafflo.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Metza, no. I'm referring to a specific section in law, a carve-out for hotels or motels, lodging establishments, or resorts that pays an employee working under a contract with the employer that includes the provision by the employer of a food or lodging benefit. In your, using your definition of your words, I'm wondering if you consider that to be a tip penalty and unfair.
Representative Metza.
Yes.
Okay. In that case, Mr. Chairman, Representative Metza, then, as this bill moves forward, at your request, I'm going to, I will add a deletion of that section from law to the bill at your request.
Representative Metza.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Portman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like a roll call on the...
The roll call is called.
Representative Grafflo, I think I just have one more question. I'm wondering if you believe that the proliferation of technology in the restaurant environment is attributable to Minnesota passing a minimum wage increase in 2014.
Representative Grafflo.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Portman, no. But what I do believe is that when we mandate a higher cost structure on some of the highest paid employees in an environment, we are creating a regulatory preference to automate. That's what I believe.
Representative Portman?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, Representative Grafflo, I think that labor costs are always going to be a big portion of a business expense, and when a business can automate or upgrade technology, you know, when we switch from typewriters to word processors, I don't think it was because anybody instituted any wage policies. I think it was because there were efficiencies available because of technology. And I didn't notice the iPads at the airport appearing right after anybody increased the minimum wage.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Portman, what I would say is the false analogy to a word processor and a typewriter, in that case, you have a better product at a lower price. And the analogy we're talking about today, we're talking about a regulatory preference that's incentivizing the elimination of jobs.
Representative Portman.
Mr. Chair, I would never say that an iPad is a better product than a waiter or waitress, but I do think that there is a drive towards technological advancement in any commercial environment, and that this bill will not have any impact on the number of iPads that appear at restaurants and the number of walk-up service. That's about social changes in society. Minnesota has more women working than any other state in the country. I think that that's why women like me go to Panera on their way home from work and buy dinner for their family. It has nothing to do with the minimum wage.
Representative Metza.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, about bringing this, I guess, to a point of me rambling, which I tend to be good at sometimes. And I think
we've crossed that point, Representative.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
We may have crossed that point, Mr. Chair, I heard at the coffee shop this morning. However, I did want to point out that I thank the rest of the committee for coming back and indulging in a little more debate over this. We went through a long process over the 2 years previous in raising the wage, which hadn't been done in a long time, and I do think that for the public to get some input and some insight into what we're doing, that you know, a few extra hours for us at the legislature at the end of the night, you know, means all the difference to those folks looking for that extra dollar an hour at the end of the year. And at the end of every pay period. And so I appreciate everyone coming out and sticking it through tonight to have a good, transparent public debate. And I hope this moves on to taxes next and can have the same there.
Thank you, Representative Metza. And again, I want to thank the committee also for coming back. We wanted to make sure we had plenty of time to discuss this important issue with all parties, and we had a lot of good testimony today. So having no further questions at this time, Representative Groffalo, do you have any final comments before we remove your motion?
No, I just want to, first of all, it's a good bill. I'd ask people to vote for it. Again, I need to work with the DFL in order for this bill to become law, so if you have suggestions on improving the bill, please let me know. I'm happy to have attempt to address your concerns. But last and finally, I just want to thank the staff for sticking around late. I know for us, we sign up for extra hours, and it's probably one of the more tough parts of the job, but I do want to thank the nonpartisan staff for sticking around, and I'd ask for member support for this bill. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I renew my motion to have House File 1027 be recommended to pass as amended and referred to the General Register.
All right. Thank you very much. The clerk will take the roll.
Garofalo.
Yes.
Baker.
Yes.
Mahoney is excused. Clark.
No.
Fabian.
Yes.
Gunther.
Yes.
Portman.
No.
Isaacson.
No.
Johnson is excused. Lunin.
Yes.
Metza.
Nope.
Neuberger.
Yes.
O'Neill. Excused. Scott.
Yes.
Simonson.
No.
Smith.
Yes.
Swazinski.
Yep.
Vogel.
Yes.
Wagenius.
No.
You could do Gunther twice.
Because I'm twice as big as you, or what?
No, you've been here twice as long, at least.
The motion passes tonight. 10 ayes, 10 ayes, and 6 nays. The motion, House File 1027, is on its way. Thank you very much. This meeting is adjourned.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.